This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Vision 2023, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio, sponsored this year by Napa Auto Care. And I am in the incredible studio right off the Expo Hall. And I think I'm with three nerds. And I just discovered that. I had no idea. They're playing with their headphones looking like, who's that guy from Star Trek?
I think it was Jody.
You want me to do that reference again?
Do that. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. How's that for a look? Yeah. Loving it.
So I realized I've got my hands full here with these guys. This would be great. Who's with me is Kurt Eichenberger. All these are Napa trainer. You guys have been training for Napa. Kurt, welcome. Ryan Thompson. Glad to have you. Bill Weaver, how you doing?
I'm well.
Good. So there's a whole bunch of Napa trainers here. I know at least five of them. And I know you guys are doubling up on training. So thanks for the commitment here at Vision. And I looked at their schedule and figured out that they weren't training. We're here early in the morning. And I just want them to share stories of, as a trainer, and they're never home and they're always out there. And, you know, we've got virtual today. We have leader led, or is more called like in person. There's so much going on with training today. And I want to get their perspective and have them in here and talk about just quickly what classes, how long they've been in the industry.
Accomplish more by starting now. That's the motto of Repair Shop of Tomorrow, a Napa Auto Care exclusively endorsed vendor. RSOT will look at productivity, efficiencies, effective labor rate, average hours per car, labor profit percent, measure and manage labor, and how you can create net profit. Interested in Repair Shop of Tomorrow? 440-545-1230 is the number for a free 20-minute no-obligation consultation, or contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store.
Let's start with you, Ron. How long you been around in the industry?
I've been in the industry since I was 15 years old, working in a shop. I've been a trainer for 7 years.
7 years. Love what you do?
Absolutely. Best job I've ever had. A lot of road time.
If I romance you with an ATEC diagnostic job in my place, you can go home every night, be with the family. Would you take that?
Tempting, right?
He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. Did you notice that?
Evasive maneuver.
That's smart, because other people are going to listen to this.
Yeah, it's a tough decision. You talked about being on the road, and I think every trainer out there, whether you know you work for us or you work for another company, it's definitely a commitment. It's not just a commitment on our side. It's a commitment on the family side also. Oh, so, yeah. You know, one thing I would ask when they see us out in the field, just remember that every time we're out doing one of those classes, we got people at home that are eating dinner alone, and it's a big sacrifice. Yeah. So when you put that out there, could we take that ATEC job and go to it? I got to tell you, personally, it tempts me a lot. But really? Then I go back to how I ended up in this industry. And there were people that took the time through apprentice programs to show you how things worked. And that's how I learned. And I guess when knowledge is sort of a burden, once you accumulate it, it's your burden to distribute that back out to the field.
I mean, trainers love what they do. And I so respect that. Thank you for saying that, Bill. During Tracy and Matt, my kids' formative years, I wasn't home 3 days of the week. And thank God for St. Anne, who raised the kids.
Brother, I see in your eyes.
Yeah. Oh, you see it in my eyes? How grateful I am to Anne? Yes. She can have anything she wants because of that.
Absolutely.
Within reason. How long have you been training, Kurt?
Oh, about 6.5 years I've been doing the trainer position in the industry since about 1992. And I heard it put best a while back that the job of a trainer isn't a job, this is a lifestyle. Don't remember exactly where I might have heard that before, but fact is that's a true story. And would I necessarily take the job back as far as, hey, I can be home every night and so on? The answer is probably not. Honesty, because in order to do this, there has to be a certain level of passion as far as doing what we're doing. And I think that's a lot of the part of what keeps us doing this, is because we do enjoy, we feel passionate about it. We do enjoy sharing or spreading that knowledge.
In order to keep that fuel in your tank, you need some kind of juice. What juices you up about training?
Oh, caffeine and sugar all the way.
That's not the answer I was looking for.
Oh, sorry. Wrong question. Oh,
it wasn't about beverage. No.
It was
about mojo.
Keeping the passion going. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. It's about when you're standing in front of a crowd and you're covering of whatever the subject matter may be and you see the light go on. Okay. When you see that light bulb light up, it's okay. I mean, at that point, it gets you excited about it. Like, they're getting it. They're understanding.
You're having an effect on their lives.
Correct.
And their careers, and hopefully potential income someday, and their knowledge base, and the fact that they made a great friend out of you, and you probably would tell them, call me anytime, right?
Generally do, yes.
Yeah.
I actually had a good example. I had a technician here in Kansas City that I was teaching a round of classes that are all driven towards helping them get their ASCs. And he came to the next class and had said, hey, I passed my brakes ASC, and he brought the printout. And he goes, do you need this? And I said, for what? And he said, do you get a spiff or something off of this? I said, no, man, I just wanted to be proud of you. I said, let me know so I can tell you that you're doing a great job. And that's very rewarding.
That is a great, great story. I mean, yeah, I get the spiff, the misjudgment of, I took the Brex ASC so that I could get a Coke somewhere.
I think he spent some time as a service advisor. I think that's where that came from.
Oh, I got it.
Had to have happened.
Great story.
So I had a moment in a trade show. This was early in my career, which affirmed that I'm probably going to continue to do this until I can't do it anymore. And a very large man walked up to me at a trade show and got uncomfortably close, reached over and gave me a hug. And I'm kind of creeped out a little bit. And I'm like, all right, what was that for? He explained to me he was able to take his family on a vacation for the first time ever because of training and the amount of extra cars that he could go ahead and fix.
Wow.
And the gratitude. And I think that's the word that you were looking for. The light bulb going on, but the gratitude to know that you made that difference. Growing up in the aftermarket, being an aftermarket tech in the 80s and 90s, there was no training available. So we had to rely on finding an old timer who had the patience and tolerance to pay you a little bit of money, because it was a true apprentice program when I came up. There were not a lot of technical schools available, and the technical schools fell far short of what we needed to have at that time. It was the beginning of computers and fuel injection. We were going away from carburetors and known simple systems that, while they're still technically simple, they just changed the position and how things did. It just, a lot of changes happen. So going all through that, the gratitude that we get back, taking the extra money, as you mentioned, Carm, the light bulb going on, and the certifications, just to be more professional and lift the entire industry. I think it's why most of us do what we do.
Guys, we've never been, so I guess 5 years ago, I could have said this same thing. Wow, look at how quickly the technology is coming at us. Now we can say the same thing, and it's even faster and heavier and harder. And with EVs and ADAS, it's such an interesting time for technology. How do you guys keep up with it? Pick the classes, write the courses?
Oh, boy. That's a very good question. And I mean, quite honestly, right now, in my opinion, this is a fantastic time to be in the industry. I mean, like it or not, the industry is going electric, and some of us may love it, some of us may hate it. That's all well and good, but we are going, as a whole, we're going electric. So personally, I just feel it's a great time to be in this position or in this business, because this is the most dramatic change the automotive industry has ever seen. I mean, we've been...
But do you mean good to be in the business from every aspect, as a trainer, as a tech, as an owner?
Yes.
Because they now need you more than they ever did? Is that,
well, that part is true. And I'm just referring to being able to witness and be part of.
Got it. Okay.
You know, regardless of...
Yeah. Let it in, baby.
Yeah. Regardless of what your position in the industry may be, it's a great time to be in the industry. Because again, this is the most dramatic change we've ever seen.
It's great to hear that. Feel the same way, Bill?
Yeah, I think that staying current requires an extreme commitment. Don't want to talk out of school, but I know that Kurt has plenty of time that he should be with his family that is in the local garage trying to keep up with stuff, trying to keep his hands into it. It's staying current is one of the hardest things. Now, over at Napa, we have great relationships with our suppliers, and we get a lot of cutting edge equipment to experience, to see, but there is no replacement for actually going out and doing it.
Case studies.
Yeah. And when you talk about ADOS, I have a small ADOS studio that is not open to the public, just so we can experience these things and do the calibrations and see how they fail. And I'll take, in my area, I have relationships with smaller body shops that don't have the ability to have the equipment, but yet I can fill that niche for them on an as needed basis whenever I'm kind of close to home and actually experience these problems. So I think all of us do it. So we can go out and talk to our technicians in the field. We know how hard that bolt is to get to. And we know that that doesn't come apart exactly the same way that you think it would. And just the little tricks to give us not only that credibility, but to pass that on to the people that are sitting out there, that when they go back to work, they have this, not silver bullet, but they have these warnings of pitfalls that they may fall into, because we've done this and I've broke this before. So why don't we go ahead and come up with a different way to do it?
Kurt, when you go into the shop and do a case study and have these, oh my God moments, right? Do you go and tweak the class?
Yes. And quite honestly, it's not even case studies. Yes, most definitely, because that's where a lot of that material will come from. But it's not even so much about that. It's about staying current. And it's one thing to be able to stand in front of an audience and talk about a subject. And it's a totally different thing to talk about it when you've actually having done that. Hey, I have done this. I know where the pitfalls are. I'm trying to share that information with you, so hopefully you don't have that same issue. Hey, don't do that kind of a situation. Does that make sense?
It does. Night training, daytime, do you prefer?
Oh, well, personal aspect, daytime training generally works better given the time and the environment, as far as you can actually do things more hands-on than in the evenings. But the evening classes, and we've tried to do this a number of different ways, the evening classes generally work better for shops, as far as if I'm going to send one of my techs or all of my techs to training, I'm in business for one reason, and that reason is to make money. And if I'm not making money, you know, I'm not in business long. So I need to be able to send my technicians to training, and generally evening works best, because that way it affects my bottom line as little as possible and my shop productivity.
I don't mean to get into a deep, dark hole.
No, go right ahead.
I hear so much about this. Look at Word Vision. More and more and more and more. I'm telling you, I've been here for 5 years now. There's more guys that have closed and brought their entire team. One guy brought 21 of his tech, closed all of his branches, brought them all here. 21. He's spending maybe 30, 40 grand.
Let me interrupt. He's investing.
Yeah, not spending. 20
Thank you.
To 40,
that's where I was going. Thank you so much, Bill. I was going with the word. I was going to try to get to the word ROI, return on his investment. Every one of the shop owners I've ever interviewed and talked to, and I said, lose a lot of volume. He goes, it's amazing how we make that up. He says, we always have one of the best months during and then after. And not only is the networking of the team, but we come to learn. We don't go to eat pizza and fall asleep at a nighttime course. And I'm not knocking nighttime courses, because they're necessary for a certain segment of our industry that feels training is a cost, not an investment. I know I got to do this. Walks away from a shortened 3-hour GDI class and they learn three things. They come to a daytime and they learn 20. And that is something that I love to use my little soapbox with this podcast. And maybe there's now 10 more shop owners that are going to listen to this and say, all the trainers he's had on and all the passion Carm has about this, number one, commitment to training as an investment, period. Track the courses. You hire somebody new, you want their training resume. I need all the courses you've attended, who taught them, if they liked them, who paid for them. Training must be a critical pillar in the company if you're going to succeed. You just said it. It's a wonderful time to be here. But technology is coming at us like the windstorms we've been having. It's a whirlwind of change that's going on. How are we going to keep up? And how many class types, how many electrical classes do we have to go to? How many?
All of them.
And then over and over again, right?
Yes.
Hey, would you do me a favor? Go out and do a refresher on electrical. But boss, I really know that. Just do it. And then come back and tell me something new that you learned. Because I know you're going to learn something new.
Teaching or taking, it doesn't matter. You're always learning something new if you have that open mind. There is so much, going back to your soapbox. I like to stand up there for a minute with you.
Yeah.
It's time to make a commitment. It is. Nighttime training, while I love it and it's great, it is convenient. I mean, at one time, is the industry going to step up and realize that this is serious advancements of technology, and being able to absorb it 3 hours at a time, six times a year in a nighttime class with, as you put it, pizza and soda after working 8 hours a day, the absorption rate of the material is very, very low. I mean, you just stacked everything on top of your day.
Pepperoni blocks that.
It does. And the only thing, good part about the pizza is it gives them heartburn and they stay awake for those 3 hours when they should be at home.
Did I mention caffeine and sugar?
We're back to the food.
Anybody have a Tums?
Yeah, by the barrel, right? But it's time for the industry, and what you were saying about the shops that have closed and brought their people to this event, or we go to a different event. By taking that, it's a team building exercise. It's an investment in your tech. It's showing your tech that you're making the investment and really want to make them part of the company that you keep, the bread and butter. I mean, most of our garages are independent repair facilities, and it's a mom and pop situation or a couple partner situations. And it's just so important to make sure to retain that help, that you make the investment in that help, and you show them that if you come back after training and you show me you've improved your skills and your profitability, then everybody wins, right?
Yeah. And Carm, I do daytime training. That's what I do entirely, wholly. Sometimes I help out with a nighttime class, but that's because I've asked for it. But I do 8-hour days, a lot of hands-on, roughly 50%. And I'm doing your techs that are like their lube techs or their C techs and the ownership of the shops.
Let's call that.
Sure. Absolutely. Because that's the point why they're in the class, right? Yes. The ownership says training is mandatory, and this lube tech job or maintenance tech job, that's a temporary thing. I'm growing you. I'm investing in you. And I'm very, very busy with that. And that's one of the things that I really get out of it, because I'm seeing a little bit of progression. But there's a lot of shops that are out there that are currently committing to that. And they're not only knowing that there's value to it or abstract, we have to do this, they're seeing retention rates go up in their shops because of it.
Hey, Carm here, just to let you know that Napa Auto Care was top rated in a national survey by consumers of car repair in the chains and independent repair shops category. Ratings were based on courtesy, timeliness, quality, price of repair, and percent of times the problem was fixed on the first visit. Napa Auto Care is the only banner program to make these ratings. Consumers are familiar with the Napa Auto Care brand, and you can benefit. Napa Auto Care has the largest network of independent professional shops in North America with over 17,000 locations. Your independent repair facility can join this network and be supported through Napa's national marketing through the already successful Know How for All campaign, which promotes Auto Care specific offerings. You also get support to promote your local repair facility with targeted media in local markets and in proven channels. You can also utilize a full calendar year of promotions with Napa Auto Care sales driver promotions that are 100% fully funded by Napa. And this includes free email marketing, digital and print point of sale materials. Also, connect a national presence by co-branding your locally known brand with the nationally recognized Napa brand. Also, partner with Napa Smart Sign to educate customers with engaging video that tell the why behind the needed repair or service. You can access editable digital menu boards, template builder tools, social media feeds, and integrations with other auto care program elements. Also, offer a credit solution to customers with Napa Easy Pay Consumer Financing. Stay top of mind with your business name embossed on the credit card. Also, have an online presence when consumers search for a local repair facility on Napa Online, which generates millions of views per month at no additional cost. Hey, if you're interested in partnering with Napa Auto Care and capitalizing on the Napa Know How for All national marketing campaign, contact your salesperson or servicing Napa Auto Parts store.
If we know that we're going to a daytime class, you just don't book so much. Or the other really great thing, let me just serve this on a platter to every shop owner. Do you offer vacation to your people ever? Okay, great. Do you have 4 or 5 techs, service advisors, someone in the office? Man, can you imagine 5, 8, 10, 20 weeks that people are on vacation? And can you believe we never missed a beat? It just works. We all pitch in and do a little more.
Carm, let's take that a little bit farther. At every shop and every day, something goes wrong. It alters the schedule in that shop. Yeah. Yet somehow the team pulls together and gets those cars out. So we have the capability to make that time up. And we're just pacifying ourselves to not look in the mirror and tell ourselves that we have not made the investment in our employees and in training. Yeah. And whether you are the employee and haven't made the investment in training, that's a mirror conversation. It literally is.
The word you're looking for, Bill, is denial.
That works. But Ryan said it so well just a few minutes ago about that whole retention thing. The amount of money it costs to find a really, let's not even call it a unicorn, the best of the best, just to find an individual that's worthy of working for me and coming in and filling a position of a technician, whatever level, the greatest R&R, the greatest diagnostician, the cost that it has. And it's not, it's the cost of lost revenue. It's the cost of unhappy customers. It's the cost of the weight of the rest of the shop trying to meet our sales goals with everybody having to pitch in. But wait a minute, Carm, none of this has anything to do with training, but it does.
Oh, it absolutely does.
And it's the culture of the business that says we're going to train, and we're going to train in all positions. I'm going to training for leadership and culture and finance, and they're going to service advisor training, which your guys, you know, Napa has, and we're going to have 40 to 50 hours for every technician. And if we could go to how many daytime classes, you come back. I sent Ryan to training and he comes back, and lunch and learn tomorrow is give us an hour of what you learned yesterday. Because when you teach, you what? Learn. And so he comes back and he spews out and shows some notes. And this was really cool. We got to try this the next time. You energize yourself and your people. And this residual of going to training, I don't care if it's nighttime or daytime or even virtual. Pay attention, because you're in charge. You'll teach a little of this tomorrow.
I love the term you said, the residual effect. And to increase that residual effect, I know we're going to talk about a little bit later, what's the student's burden when they go and they leave a class? And I would say that's to apply what you've learned.
Yeah.
Remember, when you learn something, when you read it or when you're told it, there's a certain amount of retention. If you have been told it and then you go apply it, there's an added level of retention. If you learn it and then do it and then teach somebody else how to do that, you now own it forever. And it will never leave your mind. I firmly believe that. So when we go through training, I can tell you information, but it is up to you to go back to the shop and apply that information. If you really want to understand how to hold that information for a lifetime, learn how to do it, and then find somebody else in the shop and teach them that skill. Because if you can teach somebody else a skill that you have mastered that skill.
I would agree with that completely. And I mean, quite honestly, in the 6.5 years I've been doing this, I've learned more than in the 20 plus years that I was simply a technician alone because of that very fact, because teaching it to someone else also instills it better in yourself. And I mean, quite honestly, how many of us trainers overall are here at this event this week? And how many of us as trainers are going to other classes while we're here and taking advantage of that opportunity? Because even as a trainer, we are going to learn things 100% of the time.
Oh yeah, not just going to it, excited about going to it.
Correct. In fact, some of us even came in early or are staying a day past when we actually have a class simply to take other classes.
Learning style too, training styles.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that cool? I tried to emulate a couple of super interviewers in the past when I first started as well.
First started, I took a lot of notice to professions that have nothing to do with automotive training. I looked at preachers. I looked at professional orators. I looked at people who talked, and then you take your own personality and blend it into it. I literally feed people facts with a fire hose. It's my style of training.
Do you pound on the podium?
I wear shoes out, Carm. I literally stand in a class and wear the bottom of shoes. It's hilarious. I don't know how it happens because I really don't move a lot when I'm outside of the classroom.
Are you a pacer then?
Oh, yeah. I'm always moving. We teach in the back of the room, the front of the room, because that gets everybody. You don't know where I'm going to be standing. Yeah. It'll be next to you.
Guys, I got to tell a story about Vin Waterhouse. You guys
know Vin.
Yeah, right? Yes, yes.
All right. Years ago, I brought Vin in and he sat in front of all my customers. He's doing the labor factory and everything. And I didn't think I could be a comedian and get up and emulate someone. So I says, hey, we got Vin coming, and I love him to death. He's still a great friend. We drank a lot of wine together. But Vin's movement, and he's in your face a lot. He bends down, he looks you right in the face, and he asks these questions. And he's never, never stand still. And I adored that energy that came from him, because people are always looking around. He's, oh, God, he's going to come in. He brought that.
Keep them on their toes.
Yeah, he kept them on their toes. And is that how you do it, Bill?
Everybody's got their own style. But yeah, that is. And again, with nighttime training, it's our obligation. It has to be infotainment. You can't just feed them facts, especially on the nighttime side. And I'm sure that happens over in the daytime. They get bored and you lose them. So the entertainment, the shop humor, the stories going back to, oh, this is a horrible fail. What do you see what I broke this week? Just to put that levity in there to let them know that we're all human. We all learn all the time, but it's also so important for us to stay awake and to be, as you called it a little earlier, present in the class.
It's a level of energy that the challenge for the trainer not only is to get the course material across, but to keep them awake. And it's a cauldron that you're constantly churning. And so you look at let's talk about nighttime. And you're looking probably at the back of the class because that's the people who want to sit there and just,
okay. I have actually made classrooms.
Round?
No. I've made them turn around.
Oh.
I've literally done this as far as everybody always likes to sit way in the back of the room, way in the back of the room, way in the back. Okay, there was a particular group that I had been going to for quite some time and had a fairly decent rapport with the guys. And we had fun with it. And everybody always sat in the back. And finally, one night, I'm up in front. I'm set up. I'm ready to go. I'm checking everybody in. And I get everybody checked in. Okay, we ready to start? Yep, good. I picked up my PC, walked to the other end of the room, set up my projector on the other end of the room. And it's like, everybody turn around. Now you all in the front row, how are you going to like that? You know, and everybody got a good laugh out of it, but it kind of got the point across as far as, look, you can sit in the back, you can sit in the front, whatever. I'm going to pick on you wherever you happen to be. And I've been known to call people out on a regular basis. I will call them out and put the spotlight on them.
You're doing that not to put them on the spot, but to force the learning inside?
No, because personally, I feel it's more of a personal interaction. Honesty, number one.
You break the ice with them.
Correct. I'm personally interacting with that particular person, whomever that may be, number one. I'm not just some guy up in front who's, you know, speaking into a microphone, has a clicker in their hand kind of a thing. But number two is their buddy and they're sitting right next to him. They're kind of, you know, like cowering, like, I don't want to be next kind of a situation.
Oh,
and
then
they're
going to see that.
They're going to get the elbow to the ribs. And I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. You're next. Don't worry.
Absolutely.
You know, it's fine. The harder you push that way, the deeper the bond gets.
Yes. 100%.
There you go,
that's
Ryan.
The reason, that's a big part of it. When you're in front of a classroom, you're not teaching, you're performing. It is a performance, so to speak. And you want to have their attention. You want to make sure that they're comfortable. If they're not comfortable in that room, they're going to get very little out of it.
Guys, is there a point in time, an hour in, say it's an all-day class, Ryan, an hour in, do you do a personal quick? I mean, you don't stop, but are you constantly assessing where the absorption rate is in the class?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And since we do a lot of hands-on in the classes that I do, I have to try and do that very quickly. So I'm pairing a technician with another technician that can learn from them as well as from me.
But how do you know that one needs the other?
Questions.
Okay.
Yeah, qualifying questions.
Yeah, let's talk about assessments. I mean, I think that's a perfect tie-in to the word assessment. We need them today before anyone comes to class?
That is something that's been bounced back and forth, and here's the pros and cons of it. If I would assess people to come before my class, I could tailor my class to exactly that group that I had there. But by doing that, I alienate about 66% of A, B, or C tech. We'll just continue with that on down the road, right? A, B, or C.
All right.
So if I tell you I'm going to teach to B, A's don't want to show up, C's are going to be overwhelmed.
But wait a minute. No, my point of it is we're doing a class on this topic. And before they even show up, we're assessing, and only the people that really need the class are invited or either qualified in or qualified out.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. Is it crazy?
We have tools right now. Micro learning tools is what it's the industry term.
Okay.
It's an app that asks technicians 3 or 4 questions a day. And it's
is that today's class?
Yeah, okay. It is.
Yeah.
And we ask those questions, and it doesn't just give like, hey, you're qualified for this class or you're not qualified for this class. It gives a real breadth of information for management teams to kind of decide, hey, this person that I hired that had this great resume that talked this really good story needs more training.
I've interviewed today's class. I find it to be a fascinating piece of software. Do most of the Napa Auto Care shops have that?
Not, I wouldn't say most.
So we've got work to do. Maybe right now we can sell them on the value of this perpetualness that you know, if questions come at us. And the beauty of it is that the shop owner gets a chance to see competency levels. And it's not a negative term. It's a really good term of what's going on with the knowledge base. And then they could tailor classes.
Yeah, it's information they could use to tailor the classes. Absolutely. To figure out what their team needed, what their each individual member needed to add to it. So if we're doing the daytime training, they tend to do assessments. And then the people that send, the corporations that send your students tend to have a pretty good idea of where they are. Now at nighttime, because we market it through the Napa distribution centers, through the stores and through our independent store owner networks, it's open to anybody who buys parts from them. And that's the way that we do the nighttime, because we feel for the aftermarket industry to narrow it or to do skill assessments, while we still probably should offer that out there so they know what they're getting into, we try to keep it open to everybody. And then as an individual instructor, that's where the burden comes in to make sure that you're giving something for everybody, whether it's the lube tech looking to move up or the service writer just to understand what his tech was trying to tell him about why this new service is needed, or why we have to add looking up battery install or looking up how to recalibrate a mirror or a front radar sensor or pulling the bumper off of a vehicle. What else is involved here at this point? So we just want to make sure that while we're not disqualifying anybody from being there, we try to keep the nighttime stuff open to anybody.
Or to elaborate on that, as a service advisor, why is my technician telling me that he needs an extra half an hour of labor time? Oh, that's right. I have to perform a battery registration and or reset procedures on this vehicle, which maybe I didn't realize as a service advisor, and therefore I need to adjust my method of sales or estimate or whatever the case. And to elaborate on that point, as a student, if you come to class, at the very least, you are going to learn one thing, okay? But if you only learn one thing, I probably didn't do my job very well. And, you know, in all honesty, I'm hoping you learn more than one thing. But if you walked out of there and you learned one thing new, it was at least worth your time of being there. One thing that's going to help you. And the way I put it is, I like, you need to know something, you learn something that will help you tomorrow, okay? Help you in the shop tomorrow. Yeah, it's great to learn about what's coming down the pipeline, what I might see in my stall 5 years from now. But I guarantee you 5 years from now, A, it will have changed, and B, I will have forgotten most of what I learned if I haven't applied it.
Kurt just brought up something so interesting. So my question is do our service advisors need some type of technical training?
Yes. 100%, yes.
Big time.
Do you guys have a class like that?
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I think you talked to Paul yesterday, didn't you?
Paul, yeah.
Paul Marquardt, yeah, he does Paul's a great job for us. And Paul is a very successful shop owner, so what he teaches, he actually applies. And he, again, shut the whole shop down. His whole crew is down here. Yeah, so Northwards Auto Tech, he's got everybody here.
Matter of fact, I missed them in northern Wisconsin on Thursday because I was teaching there, and they were here.
Wow.
So anyway. I had a chance to teach his class, and there's a really large aspect. Basically, the whole last half of the class focuses on the technical items that service advisors a lot of times need brought up to better understand what they're selling.
Wow, amazing. I love where this episode is going. I thought about apprentices. You've got a nationwide apprentice program. Are you guys involved in that training? Or is it all virtual?
No, the apprentice program, that's run through the Auto Cares, and that's mostly done on their side. And it's a mix of, they do have requirements to attend some of our nighttime stuff.
Okay.
But that's mostly done to push them towards their certifications, a lot of online. And if you're interested in it as a shop owner, it's a great program because you get to watch the progress and you get to steer it. And the goal is to end up with a trained technician that's trained in the field that he's looking to be certified in, but also watch him go through the certification process. So I think you've interviewed him before. Jake Sorensen really did a lot of work putting that together, and that program is just stellar.
Jake was just on with us yesterday.
Yeah, it's too funny.
I love Jake. He's just a great guy. Wow. Is there any kind of ideal class size when you're doing nighttime or daytime? I mean, I know you're doing hands-on. You told me 16 in the class, something like that, right?
Yeah, Ryan? It really doesn't get much more than that. And depending on the class, it even needs to be maybe 12.
You can easily tell with a hands-on class. I mean, you watch for the guy standing in the corner. You know, he's got the deer in the headlights look on his face, or he's off on the side smoking, or he's not involved, not paying attention. Okay, hey.
Do you give him a boot?
No, you try to get him more involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't mean a boot to get him out. I mean, you go and say, hey, listen, I know your owner's paying pretty big bucks. He really cares about you learning.
Oh, okay. I pick on him. Hey, you, why don't you come here? Let's talk about this. Show me. Okay. What do you think about this? I bring them in as far as that goes. And even in the nighttime
engagement.
Classes,
I just
heard. Engagement. Yeah. Correct. Even in the nighttime
forced
classes.
Forced interaction.
Yes. Yes.
That too. Yeah.
Yes. In fact, I'll even warn classes if it's a new group or a group I haven't been to in a while. I'm like, hey, just so you guys are aware, user participation is not only strongly encouraged, it's kind of required. And when I say user interaction, and this is right at the beginning, I will point out one person sitting somewhere and I will say, you. Yes, you with the hat on. When I say user interaction or involvement, what am I looking for? And they'll be just kind of like, you picked on me. And they kind of have that kind of a look. And I'm like, that means you get to participate, right? Shake your head. Yes. Okay, good. See, that's what I mean. You get to participate. And it does bring them in. And they're too, back to what I had mentioned earlier, their buddies see them you know, oh, he just got picked on.
And yeah, well, you're setting the tone of knowledge transfer, what you're there to do, what they're there to do, and sometimes there's a gap. So you try to tighten up that gap. And they know early on that Kurt's serious about me being here and being engaged and participating. And so do they all of a sudden become engaged from then on?
Depending on the personality, yes. Okay, some right. people yeah. definitely in the room will 100%, and you'll be able to tell. They'll feel they want to participate. They want to ask questions. They want to make comments on and so on. And that's great, because what that does is that leads to other people feeling more comfortable as far as the interaction is concerned. There's nothing worse than standing in front of a group of people and it is just radio silence.
Same people come into the classes?
Frequently, yes. The night classes, at least, yes. I'm going to say it is, generally speaking, the same, overall, the same groups of people.
That's what I hear, Bill. Ryan,
80%.
My God, we're going out there. We're seeing the same faces all the time. Reach out to the shop owners that are listening that don't have the big enough commitment to invest in training. What would you tell them?
Try it for 1 year.
Oh, I like that.
Look in the mirror. Make a commitment right now for the rest of this year. You're going to put your guys out in training and give them opportunities. Just chalk it up to make the investment right now.
Yeah.
And measure it, not after one class. Don't measure it after two classes. Measure it at the end of the year. The metrics are available. You're all watching them anyway.
Thank you. Ryan, what would you say to a shop owner?
You have to measure it. You have to look at metrics. You have to look at retention, and you have to look at certifications. And
measuring is interesting, and I love that part. And so, guys, I'm going to spend all kinds of money. I want you to pick out these classes. I'll fly out. We'll do whatever we have to do. I'm paying for everything, room, board, whatever. When you use something from that class over the next 8, 9, 10 months or the next year, would you come up and tell me that really helped? Would you come up and tell me I went back to the class manual, I opened it up, and I actually found that page that I ear tabbed, and that really helped me? Because you may see it in your numbers, you may see it in the amount of time we're investing in a vehicle, but I would want, in a continuing dialogue and a relationship with my technician, to know if the training that he's receiving is paying off to me because he figured out a quicker, better, faster way to do something.
In my classes, I get a chance to actually measure that a little bit myself and relay that to the management teams.
And how do you do that?
Well, I see the same 12 to 16 technicians for 4 to 5 months in a row. So after I teach them a brakes class, I get to come back and teach them a steering and suspension class. And I say, hey, who here worked on brakes last month?
Or last week?
Yeah.
Okay. Or yesterday?
I got it.
And if I get guys that are like, I've just been changing oil the whole time, I said, we need to have some conversations.
You know that.
And you need conversations with that shop management team.
Yeah.
Because if they're not, they're spending the time, the money, the investment to grow their technician, but then not allowing the technician to grow, that's a management problem.
Yeah.
Your favorite class that you love to teach, Ryan?
I'm just getting ready to teach it next week in Omaha. It's electrical.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great leveling field, depending on how great the technician is.
Wow.
Or it's a great measuring stick. Yeah.
Even some of the best guys that I know in the industry, they're paid extremely well. They're at the top of their craft in diagnostics. Over the years, we've had trainers on and we said, how do we repackage a basic electrical class? Advanced electronics for the beginner.
Whichever way you want to word it.
Will they come?
Yeah. The word basic in front of any class, it immediately turns off your A-level techs and even a lot of your B-level techs, because basic, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been in the business. And picking on Ryan's electrical class, for example, yeah, sure. Every electrical class out there, whether it be basic or advanced, I will bring up something as basic as Ohm's Law and do it in such a way that, oh, that's right. That actually makes sense. And you can use something that basic to figure out the problem that you're going to see tomorrow.
I love it. How about your favorite class, Bill?
I've written a lot of the classes and put a lot of stuff together for us, but I think my favorite right now is A Day in the Bay. It's a class that's based on the pitfalls throughout the day of diagnosing a vehicle. And depending on how you choose to teach it, you can go down to this was the correct way to do it, or oh my goodness, are we going to do something horribly wrong here? By taking that real world and going through the, well, here's a choice that you have to make as a diagnostician. Which way do you go? What are you going to start to check? And pointing out how misleading information, not understanding the information that you're getting from your tool, not understanding limitations of their tool, all cause diagnostic pitfalls for guys. And I just love pointing that out and steering them down that path and explain to them, yes, that's exactly the way that I would think. But if we take this other information that we're going to find later after this doesn't fix the car, then we come to a different decision. And I try to make them get those decisions in that class to understand that we should probably make that decision before purchasing, before actually hanging a part on the car. Was there another test? Was there another way that we should look at it? So having that interaction of real broken cars to go over with in the class, I have so much fun teaching them.
A day in the bay, electrical. How about you?
A couple of things. Personally, I love teaching a day in the bay. We have a lot of fun with that class. And even to elaborate on Bill, on your point, as far as some of the information that a manufacturer might give us that's misleading. My favorite, does your test lamp illuminate brightly? Really? Can you please quantify that for me? That's one of my favorites. But as far as more recently, I've kind of found that doing any of the EV type classes, personally, I found that number one is I have so much more to learn. But as previously mentioned, that is the direction we're going. And as such, I feel that I want to learn as much as possible about those type of topics, and learning about it and being able to teach it will just advance the industry as a whole.
So what are you doing to learn? Are you taking a car, jumping in and figuring it out?
Yes. And here this week, for example, and doing as much additional training as we possibly can. But yeah, when it comes right down to it, you've got to apply it.
I've seen an EV class taught, and it was all taught on case studies. There was a crash. There was a kind of a dead kill switch. And it was like, we had this vehicle. We were stuck with it. Not that there's any great EV training about what to do, when, and how, but the whole EV training was all about the case studies of the challenges that a trainer had. Is that where the EV training is going to be down the road? I mean, I know there's an awful lot of trainers out there that are specializing in hybrids and EVs, but you got to almost experience it yourself to be a great trainer.
I would say, and I think it's public knowledge now, that NAPA is really on board with the EV training, and there's been a lot of press releases, so there'll be more coming up here soon. And I think our focus is going to be the real world of EV. The safety aspect of it goes without saying. I mean, we're working on some very, very, at times, could be dangerous systems. I think our focus when we go to EV training is making them understand that we're now working with a tablet that has wheels bolted to it. It's literally a computer with wheels. We used to have a car that had a computer on it. Everything is so electronic and engineering based and theoretically protected, but there's still a lot of things that may not be exactly correct on EVs. I don't know if they're as well constructed as hybrids were. In fact, I would probably say that a hybrid vehicle is a better constructed vehicle right now than an EV. With that going forward, I think what the industry is going to have to realize is there's going to be a market change on how the technicians do their job in the bay. There's going to be a large investment in some cases, depending how deep you want to go with EVs, into new shop equipment, maybe even new shop facilities, because along with the EV challenges of repair, there's also storage and charging. And if you're in a body shop or the collision industry, there's some significant risks that now go up by having those vehicles somewhere on your place. And I think it's our job as industry trainers to sort through what people think they want to know, what they think they need to know, and what they actually should know about EVs in their shop, in the industry, because this is going to be new for everybody. It's new for shop owners. It's new for the public. The problems that we're going to run across to begin with, I guarantee, are going to have to do with charge cords and outlets and things that we've never had to deal with before.
Great point.
To kind of elaborate on that a little bit and maybe even go in a different direction, the days of taking the high school kid that seemingly didn't have direction and or desire or whatever, and just dumping him in an auto class and saying, here you go, as a place to put them, those days are long gone. Because now your technician is not only a technician, your technician has to be an expert on fluid dynamics and thermodynamics, and an you've got to be an IT expert in order to diagnose and repair a modern vehicle. And the EV market is just emphasizing that point even farther.
I'll add one thing here, Carm. I won't say, I sit on a college board and I have these conversations all the time. And I seriously had this conversation with one of the heads of the college, and I asked them how many people failed out of their nursing program. And I asked them how many people failed out of their business program. And then I asked them, you know, very politely, why do we continue to cash checks for anybody in the automotive program knowing that they have no chance and don't have the aptitude to be here? How can we identify these people in other careers, to your point about who would they start to try to put in automotive? It's not a holding pen anymore. I really believe that in order to be an automotive technician now, you need an engineering mind. You need to have that level of intelligence. And you have to develop your own way of understanding critical thinking, because you have to blend the real world of mechanical with the engineering world of electronics that's in there. And there's some limitations to where those do not blend well together.
I have to tell you, this has been such an interesting couple of days here at Vision in the interviews that we've done. Yesterday, the word engineering came up, and here Bill Weaver is dumping that on us again. And when I start hearing thematic words in the podcast that I do, then I'll probably write a blog on that. And I just recently released in my email blog Monday that we need to become master communicators about being a high-tech industry. And there's no one else that's going to be out there to say it and to tell these young kids and even the people that are in it now, look around you. We are high-tech. And if the young people today want to work in a high-tech career, automotive is got to be on the list. Wow. I so enjoyed this. Wow. Bill Weaver, Ryan Thompson, Kurt Eigenberger. It was a blast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Thanks for inviting, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.